We do have battles.
Bring 120% every single time.
Everything's a work in progress.
Everybody on the team loves to play basketball. So.
Hello and welcome back to the Phone Booth. I am your host, Tyler Pree, and I am joined today by staff writer Santul Nerker.
Hey, everyone.
Halftime sports editor Jorge Deneve.
What's up, guys?
And assistant podcast editor Nick Gavio.
How's it going?
The Georgetown Hoyas men's basketball team have played twice since we last were in the office talking about it, and they split a pair of games. In their first game, which was on Saturday the 14th, the team played former Big East rival UConn. Wasn't exactly the rivalry of the past when we had players of the caliber of Ray Allen and Allen Iverson duking it out in the Big East.
Those were the days.
Yeah, really. You know, we've been saying that for a while. the Hoyas were victorious in their game against UConn, but it did not look very promising for the first 24 minutes of the game. UConn head coach Kevin Ollie, in his post-game presser, said, "Yeah, we played a fantastic 24 minutes of basketball, but it's a 40-minute game." What really ignited the Hoyas was they were down 14 at one point. UConn had come out of the half on a decent run, and Jagan Mosley had made a steal, and he crossed half court, lobbed it from, I don't know, maybe 5-6 feet across half court, and I thought I was gonna catch it in presser. I was ready to make an Odell Beckham catch, and Rodney Pryor leaps, tomahawks it down to the delight of the Verizon Center crowd, and from there Georgetown made four straight threes and really put the foot on the pedal there. But it wasn't a runaway win. They battled back and forth with a 2-6 point lead. Connecticut actually had a chance to tie the game on the last possession of the game. Jalen Adams missed a pull-up jump shot over Okoye Gao, and the Hoyas were victorious. So it was a win. Georgetown desperately needed it after that bad start to the Big East. What did you guys see in this game that was both encouraging or maybe discouraging?
I think it was encouraging how Georgetown came back. This was a UConn team that had nothing to lose. They'd shot the ball very poorly coming in, and they had been shooting very hot throughout the game. And at the end of the game, actually, they shot 44% from three, which is much higher than their season average of 31%. But you have to credit Georgetown for sticking around, weathering the UConn runs, and eventually making a push at the end, at which point you could make the argument that UConn was pretty gassed because Jalen Adams, their star point guard, played all 40 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, you look at Adams, and he put up 22 points. I don't think Georgetown's defense found a way to really contain him. But what was encouraging was that they were able to contain everyone else, and it's very, very difficult for one player to beat you. And Georgetown had three that really stepped up and carried them to the win.
Yeah, I mean, you could tell by the end of this game that UConn was a little gassed. They only went eight deep. Four of their starters played over 32 minutes, and as Santul said, Adams played 40. I don't know. I thought definitely it was encouraging that Georgetown came back. The prior dunk was definitely huge. It looked like the effort was there in the second half, which has been something that wasn't there for this team for a good amount of the season, at least. They've been going up and down in stretches where they really look like they just don't care out there. And it was nice to see the prior dunk really invigorate them and show some effort, finally.
Yeah, and I'd say that the effort was, as Nick said, definitely it was evidenced by the performance on the boards also, because you out-rebounded a pretty tall UConn team. While it was thin, and you hold their starting center, Amita Brima, just to 3 points, 3 rebounds, and 6 minutes of play. And you get four players actually with 6 or more rebounds, two from off the bench. So I think the effort was definitely evidenced by that.
Yeah, Jorge mentioned three players stepping up for the Hoyas in that game. The notable performances were 21 points and 7 rebounds and 4 assists from LJ Peak on 7 of 15 shooting. He really played at a high level in that game. Rodney Pryor, 14 points and 4 boards. And Jesse Govan off the bench with 15 points and 7 boards, showing some real promise off the bench, because Bradley Hayes has not been the Bradley Hayes that we knew and loved last year. The hook shot, not really there this season.
No, not falling this year.
See him airballing in warm-ups, and you're thinking, what happened there?
Yeah. So it's nice to see Jesse come in and provide valuable minutes off of the bench. Also, the first time Trey Campbell played in a game since going down with an illness. He was out for 3 games. He came back, played just 5 minutes, but it's good to see Trey back on the court. So the Hoyas beat a decimated UConn team who's without two of their 4 leading scorers due to injury. And they had just one day to recover, and they had the nightcap of the Big East's MLK Junior Day Marathon. They had a 9 o'clock tip against Providence, a team who the Hoyas have already played this season. They lost 76-70 to Providence in their first meeting on the road. The Hoyas missed they shot 8 of 16 from the free throw line, and Marcus Derrickson put up a career-high 26 points in that game. This game was not close from 5 minutes in on. Georgetown never led in the game. The game was tied for about a minute, and Providence led for 39 minutes in this game. To give you just some quick stats here, LJ Peak had 13 points and 4 rebounds with 6 assists to lead the Hoyas, and Rodney Pryor had 12 points and 2 rebounds. Only 2 players in double figures. Marcus Derrickson, who, as I said, had his career high against Providence, held to just 9 points on 6 total rebounds. Providence head coach Ed Cooley made sure that, you know, he told the press after the game they made sure that they kept an eye on him because he's a dangerous player, both in the post and on the perimeter. We've seen Georgetown dishing it down to Marcus Derrickson in the post a lot more this season. Mm-hmm. What kind of luxury does that give you? Where last season he may not have necessarily been as prevalent on the post. He was definitely a spot-up shooter, but now he has that added versatility to his game.
I mean, it's something that at Georgetown Media Day, he said he worked on a lot over the summer, his post moves, whether it's moving with his left hand or creating a shot with his right. His post game has gotten a lot better. There are still times, though, where he maybe gets a little frustrated in the post and
becomes he panics sometimes.
Because he, you know, there's 7 shots against Providence, 6 for 3s. So it's just a little more consistency, but you can tell that he's worked on it and has added an arsenal of post moves to his game.
Yeah, the Hoyas took a page out of the St. John's playbook at the Verizon Center, shooting 1 of 13 from 3 in the first half, finishing the game 5 of 23. Definitely not 15 of 23. That's mathematically impossible. Just a dreadful shooting night for the Hoyas. 32.7% from the field, 21% from the three-point line, and 71% from the line. They struggled all game, and Providence was led by a fantastic effort from Kyron Cartwright, who nearly recorded a triple-double in the first half, ended with 16 points, 11 assists, and 9 rebounds. He had his 10th rebound, but there was a loose ball foul called on the other end of the court, so he was 1 rebound shy of a triple-double. And just so our listeners know, he is 5'11". He put on a show. Rodney Bullock also really played well for the Providence, shooting 9 of 18 and scoring 22 points. It just seemed like every time – I don't even want to say every time. The Hoyas really only made one big run. It was 28-24 at one point, and it seemed as though the momentum was switching over to Georgetown. Providence hits a late 3 in the shot clock, and from there they just put their foot on the gas and bury the Hoyas. This is not a loss that's good. No loss is good, but this puts them at 1-5. Their worst ever Big East start is 1-7, and they now look forward to going to Xavier, hosting Creighton, and going to Butler starting next week. A loss like this, what is the biggest takeaway that you guys got from watching this game?
I mean, they just got outworked in absolutely every single aspect of the game. You have 5'11" Kyron Cartwright flying everywhere, getting loose balls, getting rebounds. He was insane. He outworked the Hoyas immensely. I don't know. The offense was terrible. They didn't move the ball. They got beat in transition. There was literally nothing good about this game except for that late first half run that saw the Hoyas get it within 4. But after that, I mean, I think in the second half, the closest the game was in the second half was 17, I think. The smallest lead Providence had in the second half was 17. I don't know. This was – I mean, like I said – for the UConn game, it was nice to see the effort. It was hard to watch this game.
Yeah, I mean, and Providence shot 65% from the line. If they could make their free throws, it could have been even more. And a lot of the losses we've seen from the Hoyas this year, you can point to something. You can point to rebounds. You can point to bad turnovers. In this game, they out-rebounded Providence. They only turned the ball over 15 times, which isn't great, but it's not catastrophic. They just
it's not 29 like they had against Oklahoma State.
Not at all. But they just played bad transition defense off of defensive rebounds. I mean, that's what it was, and it didn't look like anyone was running back.
Yeah. To me, their heads were just not in the game. I think the one play that sums up the half to me more than anything is I think Providence, they got fouled. They took a shot. They got fouled around 25 seconds left. So Georgetown had the ball for the last shot. And instead, Georgetown turns it over with 11 seconds left. They give it back to Providence, which hits a jump shot on the other end. LJP takes the other to the other end, gets fouled on a three, but makes one out of three shots. I mean, if there was one sequence that was emblematic of that game, it was that one. Don't get the stop you need. Lose your minds, not taking the last shot, and not able to convert for easy points at the line. So there's no one good thing to take away, and I think even more considering there's not one bad thing you can point to because there were a lot of really, really bad areas.
Absolutely. That's something that Georgetown head coach Sean Thompson III had mentioned in the post-game presser. Ed Cooley, as I mentioned, the Providence head coach, was very adamant. He said, look, I love this Georgetown team. I think they're going to be a tough out.
Because he keeps beating
them. Yeah, to be clear, Providence has beaten Georgetown the past six meetings.
Three straight.
Last year they were shredded by the combo of Chris Dunn and Ben Bentel. This year, not doing much else to stop the guard play of Providence.
You thought this year's game was close. You should have seen last year's Providence game at the Verizon Center. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, last year's game at the Verizon Center was something. The Hoyas actually, what's encouraging though, not encouraging, but a fun note, they were down by 26 in the first half at Providence last year and brought it back to within. They lost by three in that game. Something to point out. Although,
they do it this time.
Yeah, fun little fact there. Isaac Copeland was fouled on a three-point shot with less than 30 seconds left and made one of three, and so Georgetown was forced to foul. So the comeback effort was thwarted by that.
Rip but, Copeland.
Yes. Yeah. R.I.P. Isaac Copeland. But yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, the team is going to be going to Xavier, hosting Creighton, going to Butler, starting on Sunday and ending on Saturday of next week. So they have time to recover, but they need to do it fast. They got a win at Xavier last year. There is no time like for a much needed win like right now because Xavier is not playing at the level people thought they would. They're struggling in the Big East.
But they're going to be pissed off in this
game. Yeah. Xavier is going to be pissed off, and Georgetown is desperately in need of a win. So we'll have to see how that develops. But something that I think is interesting and I think we should definitely talk about is Big East play. We talked about it a little bit last episode. We've seen some people step up and other people have kind of come back down to earth. One of those people is Rodney Pryor. He averaged, I think it was 18.2 points per game in non-conference, had two, I believe it was two 30-point games. And he hasn't necessarily been the same in Big East play, and I don't necessarily know if that's because of something teams are doing or if that's just a flow of the game kind of thing. But what's discouraging from an objective standpoint is he just doesn't look to have that same energy anymore. I don't know if he's nursing some sort of injury, but he doesn't seem to have the same command that he did earlier in the season. He looks a little sluggish, almost as if, you know, his head's not completely there. You don't want to speculate too much, but that is something to look forward to. In terms of people rising to the occasion and other people coming down, who are some players that you guys would highlight in that kind of circumstance?
Yeah, I mean, definitely Pryor. You know, the surprising thing for me with him is that I still remember that one quote from the first game of the season when Pryor scored, like, I forget how many
32?
Points.
32.
And in the post-game press conference, JT3 was pissed off at him because he only had, like, one rebound or something. And, you know, looking at his whole season, that has not gotten better. Like, this game against Providence, two rebounds. The game against Butler, he barely played the whole second half. He was, you know, kind of pushed to the bench, and
he was nursing. He had four fouls in that game.
Oh, he had four fouls,
but he did. Yeah. He was not effective in the first.
I mean,
38
minutes
of that game.
Yeah, he was 0-for-8 from the field, 0-for-4 from three. I don't know. You're right. He doesn't look like the Rodney Pryor he was, you know, early on those early games. I don't know what's going on with him, but definitely the biggest difference because he was the Hoyas leader mm-hmm. early on in the season. And you don't have his, you know, 15, 20, 25 points per game. That's a huge loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, well, on one hand, I think the shooting start he got out to was just so remarkable that it was impossible for him to keep it up. Like, mm-hmm. he was shooting
50, I think it was 50 from the field and over 50 from 3-point. Yeah. You can't, that's ridiculous. Not sustainable.
It was unbelievable. So, well, on one hand, it was impossible for him to keep that up. The main thing you always hear coaches say is you can't let your poor shooting affect other aspects of your game. Mm-hmm. And it seems like he's just kind of floating through, going through the motions. And to be fair, like, he's had a couple of like bright moments, and you see how he can energize the team and the entire Verizon Center when he does it. Like his alley-oop dunk against UConn on Saturday. Like, that was unbelievable. And you see those moments from Rodney Pryor, and you think, you know, if he could get into the right headspace, you know, he has the ability to impact his team in so many ways. But he can also get reduced just to, you know, a jump shooter, which he's not that. And he's shown throughout his career that he is more than just that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, there's something going on with Rodney. We don't know what it is, but mentally he's not there. His body language is wrong. I can only assume that there are steps being taken to address that and get him out of his slump, whether it's getting him inside more or – because it's not like he's not getting the same looks. He's still shooting his threes. He's just not hitting them anymore. But if you look at the flip side, is for a player that's stepping up, LJ Peak has carried the Hoyas to victory against the UConn. And seemed to be the player they continued to look to try and create something against Providence. Ultimately, he wasn't able to, but he was still the leading scorer of that game. And I think it speaks volumes that for someone that was as electrifying as Pryor at the beginning of the season, the player that gets hot towards the end and has the ball in his hands in a close game is LJ Peak.
Absolutely. Yeah, I think we can all agree. Pryor definitely has – he's still got it in him. It's just there's some sort of funk going on. Players will mm-hmm. go through that. So we'll have to see how both he and the team handle that going forward, especially going into a tough week. But switching gears to the women's team, as you all know, the team had a great start to non-conference play, 8-2 in the non-conference. But they struggled in the Big East. They were 1-4 heading into a Friday night matchup against St. John's, who was 12-5, a formidable opponent. And the Hoyas didn't necessarily look at their best in this one. Deanna White and Dorothy Adamako each scored 19 points. White added 5 assists. But this game belonged to St. John's. Aliyah Lewis for St. John's recorded 9 points and 13 assists. Wow. And Georgetown was just dominated on – well, not dominated on the boards, but they gave up 16 offensive rebounds, got 14 themselves, but they shot the ball at 39%. St. John shot the ball at 44%. What's interesting, though, is Georgetown shot the ball 54% from three and was unable to come out with a victory. Jorge, what did you see in this game? I know you were there covering it. What did you see in this game?
Yeah, I think that's what it was. It was some poor transition defense. I mean, obviously the offensive rebounds play a part, but there were also possessions where they did play good defense. They forced shot clock violations, but one thing Coach Adair said, there were also those possessions where they played great defense for 25, 28 seconds, deflect a pass out of bounds, and St. John's would have the perfect inbounds play for an open three or a layup right under the hoop. And, I mean, Coach Adair kept the players in the locker room a little, I think, just to regroup. I mean, because they had this sort of start to conference play last year. Mm. And I think she reminded them of that. With regards to Aliyah Lewis's numbers, she was saying, I mean, she played well. She was patient. She's a senior, but she also had post players making layups. So I think her main takeaway from that game was our defense needs to be better. And we will move forward from there. And they did.
Yeah, the Hoyas turned the ball over 12 times, while St. John's only turned it over 9 times. Not a huge disparity, but where that disparity comes into play is in the points off of those turnovers. St. John's scored 17 points off turnovers, Georgetown just 4. And the second chance points also, St. John's, you know, dominated that on the night, 21 points to Georgetown's 10. It's not easy to, even if you are shooting it at 54% from the from 3-point range, it's difficult to win any game when you give up that many second chance points and that many points in transition. But the Hoyas only lost by 5 points. But they like the men, only had one day to recover and rest. They had a Sunday afternoon game with Seton Hall, who is struggling just as mightily as the Hoyas. St. John's Seton Hall entered the game on a 5-game losing streak. Georgetown had won just one of their Big East games. Something had to give in this one, and something gave big time because the Hoyas came out and blew out the Pirates. It was definitely close in the first quarter. It was 18-16 after the first quarter, but Georgetown utilized an incredible second and third quarter really to put the game out of reach. They outscored the Pirates 21-8 in the second quarter and 29-9 in the third quarter. That third quarter featured, I think it was 3 consecutive and ones from Faith Woodard.
Mm-hmm.
But the Hoyas were really paced, especially in that second quarter burst, by Makia Jones, a transfer from Wake Forest, who absolutely lit the floor up. She came in and was just everything she was looking at. She was knocking it down from three, getting pull up jump shots in transition, stealing the ball. She finished the game with 20 points on 6 of 8 shooting, 5 of 7 from deep, and 3 for 4 from the free throw line. 3 rebounds for her. Deanna White added 16 points and 4 rebounds, and Dorothy Adamako with 11 and 5. Faith Woodard finished the game with 19 points and 8 rebounds. This was the kind of win. When talking to Coach Adair after the game, she said, you know, last year, as Jorge mentioned, last year the Hoyas didn't start out the way they wanted to in conference play, but they finished extremely strong.
Mm-hmm.
And Coach Adair said, I feel like this is the win that can get us on there. You know, we've been waiting for Makia to have this kind of game. And so she has the confidence now to go out and do, you know, just let the ball fly because that's what she does. You know, Faith Woodard talked about the importance of utilizing what they learned from last season and taking it and going forward. What is a win like this? This is a 20-plus point win due for a team that is struggling to get this win on the road before going get this win at home before going on the road for 2 games.
I mean, they needed it because you could sense after the St. John's game that they knew they could play better, and that they set out against Seton Hall to do that. And when you can have maybe your best player in Dorothy Adamako only score 11, and you're still able to sit all your starters in the fourth quarter, that just builds confidence. And really, I mean, that's what this one was about. They just needed the confidence to get back to playing the sort of basketball they played before Big East started.
Absolutely. I think what's encouraging is both the play of Makia Jones, but also they got more minutes. Tyshawn King has been off and on in the season in terms of her minutes, but she played 11 minutes in this one and got 4 points. But she was a force on the defensive end. She was locking down Seton Hall defenders. That's always something that you can use, a defender coming off the bench, able to shut down somebody who's maybe hot for the other team, or, you know, somebody that you have to game plan around.
Yeah.
Yasmin Belk also played some substantial minutes, 16
mm-hmm.
minutes in this one. 4 assists and 7 rebounds for her in just 16 minutes. Those are huge numbers for the Hoyas.
Yeah, and she played great on the defensive end, matching
Absolutely.
Up with Seton Hall's biggest player, Gordon. She is the biggest girl on the team and is able to match up with other girls that are going to be more physical. So that's an asset that the Hoyas have. And, I mean, defensively, 5 blocks, 15 steals. They really took Coach Adair's message after the St. John's game to heart.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's encouraging that they've had this really rough stretch, but you see – they only lost to Marquette by 7, and Marquette's 15-4. They're in the Big East. Lost to Creighton by 2. Game went to overtime. They're 12-5. St. John's by 5, and they're a good team too. 12-5. So they're right there. They just need to get that little extra to get over the hump and get those wins. And I think, like Jorge said, the Seton Hall win could be the game that gets them there.
Absolutely. They have a golden opportunity to build a little bit of momentum. They play on the road at Xavier on January 20th, and then they'll play at Butler on January 22nd. Xavier and Butler are both 2-5 in the conference. Xavier is 10-8 on the year. Butler is just 5-13. This is a golden opportunity for the women's team to really get some momentum going forward, because they still have to play They still have to play DePaul, which is, again, at DePaul to finish the season, who is by far the best team in the Big East.
And the game only before team. That at Marquette.
And so. The game before that at Marquette. Those are two teams that the Hoyas are going to have to probably beat either in the regular season or in the conference tournament if they hope to make the NCAA tournament. They have a great resume. They have one of the hardest and one of the toughest strength of schedules in the country. And they were top five in the RPI for quite a long time. So, you know, it's now or never for the team. They did this last season, and they're another year experienced, and now they're getting big contributions from the bench. So we'll have to see how that plays out this week. Mm-hmm. But I think that's going to do it for this episode of The Phone Booth. Thank you all for listening. Thank you all for joining me today.
Of course.
You can follow The Voice Sports on Twitter at GU Voice Sports. You can subscribe to The Voice's podcast network on iTunes at The Voice Podcast Network. You can follow me on Twitter at Tyler_Peree. That's P-E-A-R-R-E. You can follow Santul on Twitter at SantulN. What's your follower count at now?
13.
Okay. Wow. Okay. We've made some progress. You can follow Nick.
Establishing yourself.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. You can follow Nick on Twitter at Nick Gavio, NickGavio. And you can't follow Jorge because
still
he's
no
not
Twitter.
On Twitter. So, you know, we may laugh at Santul, but he's beating Jorge in the follower count right now. Yeah. But we will be back after the next week of basketball on Georgetown's campus. And we can't wait to do it. Thank you all.
Thanks.
See ya.
Bye.